He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Key.
And to start this show with shortages, because Jay, you brought it up as a topic. We've been talking periodically about the chip shortage, which I don't think is really affecting anybody's general ability to buy the vehicle they want, unless they were trying to get a specific vehicle that hadn't been produced yet, and those vehicles were in the lineup of vehicles that are having chip shortage problems. But the other thing that came up in the news across my desk over this last week is that there may be a shortage of foam, partly because of the Dallas weather debacle, which is apparently where a lot of petroleum producers are, and foam seating in cars is basically made up of petroleum products. And a headline, and then we'll stop there, came across saying that there might be a possibility of foam shortages, which would cause a shortage of seat production capability over the next few weeks. We'll see what happens, but I don't think that's going to, judging from the number of vehicles I see on dealers' lots as I drive around Connecticut, which is mostly where I'm at. I haven't been out of Connecticut in a long time. There are plenty of vehicles on dealers' lots, either in the used vehicle department or in the new vehicle department, for people to be able to find the vehicle of probably of their choice. With that, Jay, if you have any comment, chime in.
About the shortages, I think the microchip shortage is real and is from what
I've read
in the last for a while.
The manufacturers, I read an article that said the manufacturers are adjusting where their chips that they're getting are going, which are to the assembly lines that are producing vehicles that they're selling, and not to the assembly lines that are producing vehicles where inventories are building up across the country in terms of dealers' lots, which is a logical way to deal with it. The chips are pretty much universal throughout the lineups of cars. They're not necessarily exclusive to a particular model in terms of what the chips produce. These microchips, as you know, Jay, are used in computers and everything else, but it's just a shortage of the numerically of the chips. And so if they can figure out where to send them to, they can get them to the lines that are producing the vehicles like trucks that they're trying to get out to the public. But I'd like to move from there to just an observation I happened this morning before the show taping, beyond the road down in New Canaan, and was followed by the latest version of the Cadillac Escalade, and I may have pronounced it wrong, but Jay will correct me. I think it's a fabulous-looking vehicle. I think it may be the best vehicle in the General Motors lineup of the Suburban line of vehicles. And then Motor Trend happens to have, in their latest issue, a three-row Lux Comparo between the Navigator, the Lincoln Navigator, I guess, black label, the Escalade, the Mercedes, and the BMW equivalents. And these are going to sell like hotcakes to those people who can afford them, because I think they are the vehicle of the moment for those that want that size vehicle. But I do like the Escalade. I think it looks terrific. It's the best-looking Escalade I've seen of the lineup of Escalades that have been coming off the assembly line. There's a great read in Motor Trend if anybody wants to read about them. And they, interestingly enough, the American ones came out 2-1, first and second in the Comparo test. And the Mercedes and the BMW were the third and fourth, and not in that order necessarily, but that's it on that.
All right, and I'm going to jump in here and say that I believe it's Escalade. Jay, what do you say?
That's fine. I'm sure our listeners are not really too worried.
No. I'm just curious about what it is. So
maybe I put a French twist to it.
Tomato, tomato.
Jay's got a whole list. Let's go, Jay.
Well, just to chime in on the Escalade, I think...
Okay.
Well, I've seen a few in the ski resort parking lots. it is a $75,000 to $100,000 vehicle. It's easy. So it the price is way up there.
They're up there for all
it's
four.
It's a gas guzzler. I would wait to see the. I think the GM is going to put the diesel both in the Suburban and the Escalade. They have an inline 3-liter turbo diesel coming into the into this vehicle, and that'll improve mileage. Even though we all know about the bad rap that diesels have been getting of late, but I still think that would be the engine's choice.
Well, I don't think anybody that can afford these cares about the mileage in terms of gasoline versus diesel, except somebody like myself, but I will never buy one at this level, so I'm not going to be worried about it either.
Speaking of big vehicles, I've been driving on a regular basis for the last few years a current generation Volvo XC90 hybrid. So it's a top of the line XC90. We've talked about this vehicle before. It was a horrendously expensive upgrade. The hybrid version of it, I think at the time, was $18,000 on top of the price of a regular XC90. Since then, Volvo has trimmed the cost of that hybrid option. But anyway, that vehicle now is like 3 or 4 years old. It's got about just under 60,000 miles. And I was driving it this weekend, and it had a overall fuel gas mileage average of 31.7 miles per gallon.
Wow.
Which is pretty remarkable for a full-size three-row SUV. You do have to factor in the fact that that is a plug-in hybrid, and this car is used on regular short trips around town. So a lot of times it's doing trips that are running purely on electric power, which therefore, you know, there is a cost to that associated with the charging, you know, back at home. But it's still 31.7 miles per gallon. It's a great vehicle in many ways. What I dislike about it, and I still do since day one, and I've vented about this before, is like on a lot of new cars, the infotainment system is a purely touchscreen operation where you scroll from one menu to another. And quite honestly, it is worse than texting on your cell phone when you try to, you know, either get a radio channel on or try to adjust the temperature in the car. It is absolutely dangerous. And I know that Volvo has made corrections to that system since. But the bottom line, and this is a safety tip, if you have one of these touchscreen infotainment system, do learn how to navigate it and memorize how functions work, because, again, it is extremely dangerous to get your eyes off the road to try to follow a screen.
I agree. To that point, I'd like to bring up the Mach 3, the Mustang. Is it Mach-E? I'm sorry. There's one sitting on our local dealer lot. I saw it over the weekend. I've decided I don't like it in red. I don't think it looks very interesting in red. Motor Week, which is a magazine produced TV segment, I watched the review of the Mach-E on that. I think it's their driver's car of the year. They showed him in white, blue, and red. And while the red on TV looked infinitely better than the red looking on the parking lot of the Ford dealer, I just did not get turned on by it at all, walking around it, which is all I did. But one of the things they brought up about the Mach-E touchscreen is that at least it has a volume control, a round volume control, which brings me to the point of the touchscreen situation, Jay, you're just bringing up, because I do not know and I could not see on the screen how you change channels. But I am very conscious of how difficult or easy it is to change channels on cars that have touchscreens versus the knobs. Knobs, they have not gone away in utility usefulness, as far as I'm concerned, along with heater controls that have a fan speed control and a maybe a dial for each of the passenger driver's side temperature control. Knobs are very useful. And having one volume control on the touchscreen of the Mach-E, for example, and I don't think there was any knob on your Volvo touchscreen, but no dials to turn, to go up and down the AM, FM, or satellite dials is really distracting when you're trying to figure out how to tune a radio if you don't have them in presets and can easily find them. So yes, I agree with you, Jay. It's these touchscreens are not all they're marked up to be as far as ease of use, and maybe you should be sitting in your driveway or a parking lot and setting it before you drive off on the road, because I agree you could be very distracted using these touchscreens. I don't know nothing about a Tesla touchscreen, about that kind of thing. But next, Jay?
Just in the industry news section, Stellantis making headlines. The merging of Fiat Chrysler and Peugeot.
Little blurbs are coming up about it, too. Go ahead.
And there is you know, I have a little theory on the branding of the different model lines here in the U.S., for instance. There had been talk for the last few years before the merger about Peugeot making its comeback to this market, and it has been decided that this is not happening. However, Carlos Tavares, who's the CEO of the new group and was the CEO of Peugeot before that, has said that they're, amongst the talks of getting rid of the Chrysler brand, which only has like two models right now. There's like a Chrysler sedan, the old
Pacifica
300, and the minivan. And Tavares is saying, no. We are not getting rid of any brands. We want to stabilize things. And my hunch is that they could very well bring a number of possibly Peugeot models, and not just plain rebadge them, but use them as a starting point to put out a few Chrysler vehicles and kind of
rebirth their lineup
again. But that's just a hunch. I also think that the Buick Touareg that we was sold by GM here until very recently for a couple of years, which is a great vehicle, as we all know, is in fact a rebadged Opel in Europe. And since Peugeot bought Opel, that brand is now under the new Stellantis umbrella.
They can hide Peugeot into that too, shouldn't they?
Yeah, and so, but you could see the Touareg come back as a Chrysler. It's not impossible.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this whole new Stellantis group, I think.
Well, let's move to the Alfa Romeo / Fiat side of the corporation or the company. One of the things I noted in statistics is that Alfa Romeo's sales were up 1.1% over, I don't know, it was a month-to-month comparison between this year and last year, or they're running ahead of, it was last year over 2019.
Which means nothing.
Last year being 2020. You know, this percentage thing is a voodoo economics thing to me, because 1.1% doesn't tell you anything numerically about what the numbers are on Alfas.
Alfa Romeo.
It's already so low that they're almost invisible. Although down here in Fairfield County, they are definitely visible. The Julias are on the road here.
Well, I think that in metropolitan, if I can interject, I think in metropolitan areas you're going to find Alfa Romeos. They just have very few dealership, and
they're concentrated. Well, that's true. I like the looks of them. I like the Julia looks. I'm not particularly a fan of the crossover. I don't think it looks anything different than the Jaguar crossover or the Maserati crossovers. They're all the same sort of body, rounded humps in the back and type of situations. But they are numerically more visible here than they certainly are up in our broadcast area. There are a couple of, Stelvios? Is that what they, I don't know what the SUV is. I think it's a Stelvio, but around. But they have not made any inroads, as far as I can see. So when you do, is 1.1%. If they're selling 100, 1.1%, I think is 101 cars over 100. So it's not much. So without knowing the numbers, I don't like.
I think Alfa Romeo is still going to be a mostly
invisible
brand
here
in the U.S. On the other hand, Jeep. Is in news as well, your favorite
brand.
Correct.
There's going to be an unveiling, I think, shortly of the new Grand
Wagoneer. Here in the U.S., we have the new Jeep Grand Cherokee coming out.
Grand Cherokee.
Which may or may not carry that badge, but we'll get to that in a second. But in Europe, there is a micro Jeep that is going to come out on the European market at this point, only on the in the European market, which is going to be built in Poland on a Peugeot platform. So that is going to be
smaller than the Renegade,
Peugeot platform,
which is the smallest Jeep in the U.S., I believe.
What's that?
Smaller than the Renegade, I guess you're inferring, because the Renegade is the smallest Jeep in the U.S., followed by the Compass going up the ladder, then the Cherokee, Grand Cherokee, and maybe this Grand Wagoneer, if there's going to be, I don't know what's coming there. But that'll be interesting because, of course, European, you've said the roads in Europe are more narrow, especially in urban areas, than they are in the U.S., and you really have to have micro-sized vehicles that are functionally usable around the streets in many of the probably Eastern European cities and the Italian mountains towns and all that kind of thing, Swiss towns where you go up in the roads, really, when you go into these old villages, they're barely a lane and a half wide for anything over these micro Fiats and micro cars, European cars that have been out for years. Yes?
Yeah, and then, we think of the old Jeep Samurai, and which is being, as we've talked about it, about 6 months
ago. The Suzuki
Samurai. There's a new version of that.
Yeah.
Not coming to the U.S., but a Jeep-sized equivalent would be a good addition in certain markets. And unfortunately, we probably won't see it here, even though that vehicle would probably be a lot more useful on trails than is a new Wrangler, which is like a almost the size of a Hummer.
Equivalent for European roads, yes.
Well, even going on, off-road here on any trails. I mean,
when you've been in Belgium, what have you seen in terms of American vehicles on the roads, like the Mustangs and all that, and Jeeps over there? Are there any numerically are they present, or are they just hither and?
No, historically it's been interesting. The like Ford will have a few models out of the American lineup, and
the Mustang is the one I think of.
And that's about it. Other brands like Chevrolet are actually little Chinese cars in a lot of markets, including in Europe. So the cars are not necessarily the same, even though they carry the same badge.
All right.
Okay, Jay, you had another list of things. I've run through my list. Although I do want to go back to the Mach-E briefly. I don't know if I want to go over and test drive it or not. The interesting thing about this Mach-E in our local Ford dealership there, right around the corner, is that it had regular plates on it, but up in the window corner, it had a model number, year number, and all that, as if it's for sale. And I'm wondering, it came across that maybe the dealer had to buy that to get that car, and that they actually license plated it, but it may be a test drive vehicle also. But it's not the most powerful one because those aren't even in production yet.
There's a big backup in production with the Mach-E.
That's correct.
And this has unfortunately become pretty symptomatic at Ford. Is another kind of botched up.
Yeah, they're giving $1,000. Bonuses or payouts or whatever to people for having to delay their receipt of their vehicles. Although I understand numerically that they apparently delivered 3,200 Mustang E's last month, so they are getting on the road. I've yet to see a retail one running around our northwest corner. And usually we see vehicles show up here pretty soon after they're on the road elsewhere in our northwest corner because we have an elite group of people who are capable, of purchasing these cars, and they also live up in our area, and so we see them soon. But I have not yet seen a Mach-E Mustang running around that is in somebody's hands or the dealer's lot.
Neither have I.
Okay, one quick question before you do a safety tip, if you do a safety tip.
Sure.
Robin, when you decide to test drive something, Do you in the past, have you just gone to test drive it anyway, or are you selective about what you go to test drive?
I'm selective about what I go to test drive.
All right, it was just a...
But I have not done any test drives of selective cars outside of my interests of late, and I may go to the Ford dealer this week and see if that is a test drivable vehicle, because it'd be interesting to see what it is like, because if Motor Trend thinks it's a driver's car of the year, I'm not sure why, over a Tesla or any of the other electric cars that are available to be driven, they certainly seem to like it as a very fun-to-drive vehicle, although I have to say, final time, I was not impressed. It does not stand out to me. I couldn't even tell that it was really a Mustang until I looked at the rear. It was a shaped car that obviously was a Ford, but that's what's there.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.